late than ever. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. Coming up, we'll have our Roundtable panel plus much more in the show, including Stephen Van Zandt, Jessica Alexander, and we will also continue our series of JFK stories with Jesse Ventura. That's all before news. As if I have to tell you that. Good morning. Welcome to the program. It is a delight to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. And we are assembled for our roundtable panel and have a great group for you. Let me do you want those?
No, everything is perfect.
Oh, okay. You've just decided not to. Okay.
Yeah, who needs them?
I know. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Ray Graff is with us.
Delighted.
Yes, I know.
We can tell
you're beaming. And University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. Let us begin by talking about the Supreme Court on Tuesday turning away an emergency application asking it to block a Texas law that requires doctors performing abortions to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. Of course, this story has been hotly debated in Texas and throughout the country over the last several weeks. The decision was effectively 5-4 and split along ideological lines. The effect of the ruling, Justice Breyer wrote, for the four dissenters was to leave 24 counties in the Rio Grande Valley without abortion clinics. It may, he added, substantially reduce access to safe abortions elsewhere in the state of Texas. What do you think?
They're looking at the only woman. That's as it should be. People who don't have uteruses should not be discussing abortion. I think this is a preliminary round.
I like it.
I think this is a preliminary round, and it's not worth getting upset about.
Why is it preliminary?
Because this was an emergency order. In fact, that's why the majority had the material to turn it away so easily. What they're doing is leaving the law in effect while the lower courts battle out the constitutionality of it. They didn't want to bypass the lower courts. I'm fine with that.
Well, I'm not. And it's still 5-4, and I don't have a uterus. So so it's still 5-4. I happen to believe these people just, and they're all men, right? There's no woman in that five group.
Correct.
Yeah. And the women that they do have on the court are in the four group, and it's quite clear that they have a position and that they're going to take that position. It's a warning, and I think this is one of the great disgraces of our country.
You're not surprised, nor should anyone be, that it's a 5-4 decision against pro-abortion, if you will. That's fine, but this is all a game that's played in the courts by rules, and the rules are that you don't skip ahead like this. So they had to take the step. The people fighting against the law,
four of them didn't. Oh
no! They had to take the step and bring it to the Supreme Court. But this was not a battle they were going to ever win. This sets them up to say, look, it's all politicized already. But now the battle will be fought in the lower court. And the lower courts, even in Texas, have been pretty supportive of knocking down this law.
Except now you have a Supreme Court 5-4 majority saying, hint, hint, this is where we're going.
Absolutely. But the hint wasn't needed. We already knew it. And if the lower courts rule in favor of knocking down the law, it will be much harder for the court to go against that. Then it isn't just their own political views. It's what the lower courts, in their wisdom and consideration, have come up with.
You know, Rosemary, it's not quite that simple, because quite frequently when lower courts, appeals courts, have different views than the Supreme Court, they have been known to say, you know, the Supreme Court has spoken on this issue or whatever. In this case, they're not going to say they've spoken on the issue, as you indicate.
Correct.
They're going to say the Supreme Court has hinted in this issue, or judges get drawn over the line as a result of that. So I just think this is I'm not going to even get around here. This is a horrible thing.
Well, don't get me wrong. It certainly is not optimistic news. I don't like it, but it's not unexpected. It's not the end of the battle. I'm just amazed that we're still debating this and discussing this, and it's taking up all this time and political effort in 2014. Wow. You know, this could have been 1968 and we'd
right.
be doing
it,
this.
It hasn't changed. It has become one of those things, like fracking did in New York State, a political issue that really tends to divide people, and they don't give it up, and they won't give up fracking, and the people on the con side on that one are not going to give it up either.
And Alan, much as I hate the way the issue is going right now, I do, you know, as a political science student, love the battle. And the way that the anti-abortion people lost and went back, they just burrowed down after Roe v. Wade could not be overturned and began working state by state to get what they wanted. I'm sorry, that's the way our political system is supposed to work.
Yeah, we're 40 years in. I mean, going back to your original point, 40 years and we're still...
Yeah, and they didn't give up. Well, okay, I hate their point of view, but I do admire that persistence. And they have used the system exactly as it is intended.
Well, but just because you have a system and they used it correctly as it's intended, it ain't a spectator sport, as far as it isn't, you know, it is a matter of great concern to me. In fact, when we each of us decide, and by the way, as you know, I only speak for myself here. I never speak for the radio station. I want to make that clear again. But I was here when New York became the first state, and I watched a guy named Michaels stand up on the floor of the assembly, a Republican from upstate, Jewish guy. And say, I know this is the end of my career. And he had voted with the majority to kill it, but he changed his vote. He was right. They threw him out. He didn't even get a nomination. You know, again, it was a matter of a real profile and courage because it is such an essential and important point.
I guess one thing that drives me is knowing that, you know, it really almost doesn't matter what the court says. Women in America are going to get abortions that they need.
Not everybody. Not a poor woman, for example.
It will be harder
for them.
Can't
get on a plane to go to New York.
It will be harder for them. But just like in the 1960s, when I first came into this debate, there were groups that made it possible for women to get abortions when it was illegal and expensive, and that will happen again. It's
and there were murders as a result of that. In other words, there were women who were aborting, self-aborting with coat hangers, and they were taking terrible things in order to do this. And as you do this, as you say, a doctor is forbidden to do it. You may go back to the old days where somebody helps you, but you also may go back to the days where people start to really hurt themselves.
I certainly can't sit here and argue that a country without a free abortion, legal abortion, is a good place. I can't do that.
I'm interested in just before we go over to a quick break, the Wendy Davis factor here, who is running the Democratic state senator who tried a filibuster on this and is running for governor in the state, and is making this her issue. It's one of her key issues in running in the state, and it'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Yeah, it is. I don't know enough about Texas state politics.
Well, it's a Republican state.
Of course.
It really is. And as you know, what they did was that they came up and they reapportioned the whole state rather than waiting for the every 10
it's
years.
It's like post-Ann Richards, right?
Right. Yeah. Now, Ann Richards was a character. I think she's terrific. But, you know, along came the Republicans and they beat her. And I don't know why this would be different except for one thing, and that is Texans admire people who are willing to take on the establishment.
Yeah.
And she is taking
Well, they're
on
a
the
little sick of her, too, because she was made a national figure, the pink sneaker she did her filibuster in and all of that. But there clearly seems to be a calculus here that if we go to an issue that women will be interested in, then we might get around Republican-Democratic divisions. But I don't know. I think that's pretty risky in such a red state.
Isn't it possible that she just happens to passionately believe in it and forget about the political equation?
But is it not also possible that there are those in Texas who also passionately believe in the other side?
Yeah. Right. What your point is?
The point is, it would not be wise to demonize a great section of the public without a fair hearing.
Well, did you hear anything that I just said?
I often do on this program.
No, but did you hear anything right now?
This is a very tiny case. This is a case about a procedural matter. It's the actual law is going to be going before the Court of Appeals in January.
That's Rosemary said.
This is a tiny bit. And
what
so
do you have to
it
introduce?
Comes down to the status quo. And so the key part of this New York Times article is, and I'll quote it, at bottom, the two sides in Tuesday's ruling differed about what it means to maintain the status quo while the case proceeds through the court. Justice Scalia said that the status quo is upheld and federalism principles are vindicated when validly enacted state laws are allowed to stand while their constitutionality is definitively resolved.
Well, I'm glad
I actually agree with that.
And you know, I actually,
I'm against abortion, but
Supreme Court 101, right?
I actually don't. I think it's terrible. I think we have a little legislature that sits up here. I think the Republican strategy for packing the court the way that they wanted to, appointing young people like John Roberts and others who will be there for a million years. I think this is terrible, and I think you're both dead wrong.
Okay.
Chastised. How about you, Ray?
I don't know. I'm used to it.
Let's go stand in the corner.
Let's hit the gavel, and we'll take a break, and we'll be back and talk about other stuff that we'll disagree on. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel and our discussion this morning. We welcome your input, as always, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid on Tuesday threw his support behind a measure that would give military prosecutors the powers to decide which sexual assault cases to try rather than commanders. This is sponsored by New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of Democrat of New York, who Alan had on the Congressional Corner on Friday talking about this very issue. And now the Senate Majority Leader has thrown his support behind this, and it bolstered the prospects that the plan could clear the 60-vote threshold in the Senate, even though top Pentagon leaders oppose it. He became the 50th senator to say publicly that he would vote yes, and the third in the last day. So this is gaining momentum.
I'm a bunch of Democrats. What you're all going to say about this?
I'm sorry, a bunch of Democrats came out today against it in favor of McCaskill's alternative bill.
What do you see as the difference?
Well, the difference is the role of the commanders, military commanders, in deciding and acting after rape and assault cases. Gillibrand's bill would take it totally out of the hands of commanders. It would go to military prosecutors, where the other bill, the alternative bill, would allow commanders some role. They would have less power than they do now. They couldn't overturn a jury verdict, for example, which is outrageous that they ever could. And that is the sticking point. It seems to me that action of either sort would be an improvement over what we have. Mm. My worry is that this feud will end up in nothing being passed.
Right.
But isn't this an old boy question?
Well, oddly, the two sides are championed. The two bills are championed by women.
By women, yeah.
And the whole debate, and the Harry Reid story in the New York Times did this too. It's like, oh, a little catfight. You know, we have these two women senators who are arguing. I really hate that.
Let's try to remember who they're representing. You know, Gillibrand is in, you know, basically liberal blue state New York, and McCaskill's out there doing other things, and their constituents are different. However, from where I'm sitting, I love the idea that you have you get it out of the old boys club where we've had all kinds of difficulty introducing women into the armed forces. We know that they're subject to rape, and it's happened. And why not? And why not have a trained prosecutor take a look at a situation and not the boss of the person who is accused?
Mm-hmm. From a political standpoint, it's interesting because does this move Gillibrand up in the pecking order? And Harry, I mean, there are two sort of equal backing groups. There are two plans. Gillibrand championing this one. Harry Reid gives her the nod. Does that put her up? Does that move her up?
It's so interesting that you're asking that, because a lot of people are talking about if Hillary stumbles, or when Hillary's done, because Gillibrand's still very young, that Gillibrand is being talked about as a presidential candidate already.
A rising star.
Yeah. In this country.
She's good, and she's been quite courageous in the way that you talked about liking to see a politically courageous person. Well, she's taken stands that were not in her best self-interest at all.
Well, as our mentor, Chuck Schumer, put it when asked why she was so reactionary back up here in a way that she would develop, and she has, and I'm delighted to see it.
The question that Ray asks is interesting, though, because Harry Reid himself did not want to make a choice between the two women. He likes them both, and I hate that, again, that the whole debate is being put in those terms. Which one does Harry like best, and who's
the
smarter
the
woman? Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter whether I don't think in this case whether a man is backing the other proposal or not.
Yeah.
I think as power politics go, advantaged Gillibrand.
Yeah, these are two women, two Democrats. I'd like to really see them sit down and work this out rather than have two competing.
Well, yeah, that's why I don't.
It's interesting that you put it in terms of which, you know, basically person he's going to support.
Which girl he's going to pick. Yeah, yeah, that's how it is. He's fond of both of them. No, that's the tone of the New York Times story.
As opposed to who's right. You think about it that way. I mean, to me, why in the world wouldn't you give the prosecutor, who is not in the chain of command, a chance to look at a situation and say, yes, this person deserves to be brought up on charges, as opposed to, you know, the captain or the colonel or the major who may come out of a different system at a different time.
It's not that I agree with it, but there is another side, of course, Alan, and it is that the commanders are closer to the situation, and if they're involved in the process, they're more likely to spot it, make sure it doesn't happen, and bring it to the attention of prosecutors who are removed.
I certainly stand on what I've said.
So there are 20 women in the Senate, and they have felt torn on this issue.
Two Republicans.
The two Republicans, 17 of them have signed on to the Gillibrand proposal, including two Republicans. And it could go to a vote as early as today. We'll see.
Yeah, interesting.
So we'll have more on that, I am sure. We are, we got about a minute. All right, so keep talking about this issue, and then we'll move on, go to news, and then we'll come back. But real quick, when it comes to, I want to get to what we were saying about Gillibrand and her political aspirations. Do you think that when you look at, is this an issue that you can move forward?
It's part of a bigger issue for Gillibrand. She's become a champion for women's rights, and this is one of them.
So Rosemary, would you like to be in the armed forces, and to know that?
No, I can stop you right there.
Yeah, okay, but no, but I'm trying to ask you to project yourself into it and say, okay, in the terrible event that you were raped or that something happened to you, would you really want the captain or the major making that decision as opposed to from the old boys club as opposed to an outside force?
It's a military prosecutor. If you were talking about going into the regular justice system, I would say, yeah, that's a better idea. Just like Guantanamo, why are they in a military system? Just put them into the regular, wonderful U.S. justice system, the best in the world.
Well, I know a number of people who are in that JAG operation and who I have great respect for. They go in, they go to law school, they go in, they get out. But I think that there is no reason to even hint at impugning their motives as prosecutors.
No, I'm not doing that. I think I've sort of tried to make clear that I could go with either one of these, and if I were sitting in the Senate, I'd wait and see which one had the best chance of passing, and I would vote for that to make sure something is done rather than leave it the way it is.
Okay, that's a good answer.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation, many more issues to discuss. Roundtable at WAMC, if you would like to share your thoughts. We'll be back after this NPR News break. We're enjoying the music this morning. It's good stuff. Dave.
John Scofield,
yeah,
the greatest American guitar player of our time now. This is great, Hopper. What'd you do, raid my music room?
Special thanks to our board op and engineer, Dave Hopper, who does a magnificent job each and every day.
But today, more so.
Thank you. Just because you like the music.
Yeah.
Come on. All right, let's talk about... The case in the Joseph Paul Franklin case, where last night the judge, a federal court, had granted a stay of execution for serial killer Joe Paul Franklin, and then he was put to death earlier this morning. And this was a case that went back and forth in the courts and culminated this morning at the wee hours of the morning. This was... took place in Missouri, I believe that's out of St. Louis. Yes, I think so. I don't know. You know, it just seems to me that this back and forth, like, don't we have this better than that now?
No, and nor should we. The murder for which he is being executed happened in 1977. That's a lot of years between the execution of the crime and the execution itself. the whole case is sad. I have to once again speak in praise of a pornographer, Larry Flint, the publisher of Hustler, is one of his victims. He's admitted to shooting him and paralyzing him for life. And Flint fought tirelessly to get him life imprisonment rather than execution because he does not believe in the death penalty. So once again, Flint, who, you know, I hate his publication. I hate what he stands for. But he's been an amazing champion of the First Amendment, now of, you know, ending the death penalty.
Mm. Alan, what do you think?
Well, you know, this is one of those places that I suspect myself. I'm worried about myself because, on the one hand, intellectually, I'm with Flint and those people who really oppose the death penalty. I really don't like it. I don't like it. I think we've made many, many mistakes, you can't take one of those mistakes back. I always liked what Mario said about, you know, you put him in a cell, and the only thing he'll hear for the next till the end of his life is the sound of his toilet seat going up and down. You know, I mean, that's a pretty powerful thing. On the other hand, when a guy does the damage that this guy has done, there is a part of me that is at odds with the intellectual part of me that says I'm opposed to the death penalty because, and I think any of us would probably say the same thing, although there will be people angry at me for this, but there's a part of me that says, you know, I always project my family, my kids, my anything into this, and I say, this isn't right that this guy doesn't pay the ultimate price. But then I keep coming back to all those innocent people who have been murdered.
Well, you know, revenge is a normal human emotion, but the sign of a society is that you rise above those normal feelings.
Yeah, right.
And the U.S. has not done that. And part of the controversy in this case was that they wanted to use phenobarbital to kill him with. And
pentobarbital.
I'm sorry, pentobarbital. Yeah. Right, right. It's, I guess, a form of it.
Five times as strong.
But the one of the problems was that the European Union was threatening to stop imports because of the way it was being used in this country. So that would have endangered medical use. And I mean, the Pope has lectured us about this. We shouldn't be killing people. You don't stop killing by killing, right?
I mean, that the line that that Flint says is the government has no business at all in the business of killing people. And I have a hard time arguing with that that thought.
Wow. But,
Larry
Flint, hero. God, that's hard.
Well, it's really hard.
And Larry Flint and the Pope on the same page. There you go. There's your headline.
Who knew? Yeah. Who knew? And another problem I have, it's just that it's because, I mean, I understand it's a state matter, but even the states that have the death penalty, so many of them so seldom use it, and they'll use it in some cases, they won't use it in others. And, you know, there is no uniform nature to it. And there are people who are sitting in jail in states where the death penalty is legal, and yet they have not been executed. And I just a lot of that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, but that goes back to Rosemary's earlier point about the beauties of federalism. I can't help. I mean, that's why we have these states and why there are certain powers reserved to them. And that's
these are even states that have the death penalty.
I know. But, you know, we have come. This is a if you wanted to graph this, you would see
five times stronger.
The court on several occasions coming close to wanting to do away with it.
Yeah.
Finish it. Just say this is cruel and inhuman. We can't do it. And then they back away from it. So it depends on who's on the court at a particular time. I think when the stars align, we're going to have a national policy on this.
Really? You think so?
Yeah.
I think that'll be interesting. I mean, I hope you're right, but I don't know.
Well, you know, as you know, as I've already admitted, I have a cluttered brain on this one.
Well, right, and because it's hard not to think that, especially when you hear the list. I mean, Vernon Jordan was another one of his targets,
victims.
Yeah. And I mean, when you hear the list of what he did, it's hard not to have, as you say, it's hard not to have.
Well, he's a white supremacist reaction. And was trying to start a race war. So probably yes, the world is a better place without him in it. In the same way we say about Osama bin Laden. However. Should we be doing the eliminations?
And you know the state kills all the time. It's called policemen. Policemen stops a crime, right? And something terrible is happening, and the policeman takes the gun out and shoots the perp. We've seen this before, which is why...
But that's protecting safety in an immediate moment. Yes.
Well, yes.
Clear and present danger.
Yes. I mean, we can go into this thing, and I don't want to take the con on this one. Believe me, I don't. We can go into this guy in the state prison who killed Donna Payne. Remember that whole thing?
Yeah, Lemuel Smith.
So, you know, you can say, well, if they're in prison, they're never going to do that. But even in that case, he did.
I want to turn the subject before we go over to a break and another tragic story out of the state of Virginia, where a state senator, Senator Cray Deeds, was stabbed by his son, who then shot himself fatally, and it is it was. As more and more details came out about the case, it just became more and more. And there's several issues in this to talk about, but the one I want to focus on is the fact that the day before he stabbed his father at their home in Virginia, he underwent a psychiatric evaluation. He was at William and Mary. He comes out of they take him out of school because they don't feel that he is mentally fit. They send him home. He undergoes a psychiatric evaluation. They say that he has to be hospitalized immediately.
No beds.
But there's no bed.
And there's no beds. And you are a state senator. Think about the power you have within that state system. You're a state senator, and you're working the phones all night long to try to find a place for your son. And then that morning, you're killed. It says a lot about the system. It says a lot about... the violence and also you have a lot of scrutiny on the mental health system within the state of Virginia anyway, from what I was reading in the Washington
Virginia
Post.
Tech shootings
right
started this. Yeah, this is a really sad story. It's another case where we're talking about mistreatment or no treatment for the mentally ill, and guns are involved. And I hope the rest of the state legislature is paying attention, because in Virginia, they're the ones who could fix this.
Well, you know, I actually wrote a doctoral dissertation on, you know, mental illness in this country. And I can tell you right now, there was a point at which this country decided many too many people were being put into institutions, and we have closed many of them, including several in this listening area over the years. Then the other side of that is that when you need them, they're not quite there. The promise at the time we closed these massive institutions were that we were going to set up community mental health centers.
Exactly.
And we didn't do it. We didn't do it the way we were supposed to do it.
And this kid is 24 years old, and he gets kicked out of school, and a magistrate has to issue an emergency custody order so he can go to his parents, because they want, you know, to put them in charge of his care until he is placed in a facility. And yet we don't have a mechanism when he clearly is not, when he clearly is dangerous and at a very vulnerable state, both for himself and for his immediate family.
How frustrating for this family and many others in this country too, who know there's a problem, who want to see something done, and it cannot be for lack of facilities and money.
We've had one letter today that said serial killers are mentally ill. All serial killers are mentally ill. And, you know, maybe that's right and maybe it's not right. I don't know. I mean, by our classic definition of anybody who does something that's abnormal is mentally ill.
Right.
One could believe that. But on the other hand, I've always believed if somebody pulls, my own personal belief has always been if somebody pulls a trigger on a gun and kills another person, that is mental illness, even if they are a paid mafia hitman. In other words, they're so far, but nobody agrees with me on that. So, you know, there are definitions, there are gradations of who's mentally ill and who needs to be basically, it's a bad word, but incarcerated to protect him and to protect others.
Well, and then there's also the other issue, and I don't think now is really the time or place. However, you do have to ask the ancillary question, which is, you know, upon all of this happening so soon, of why you have guns and knives in the house of someone, you know, which is you know, that's,
yeah,
that's hindsight being 20/20, and you don't have any time and you're worried about your son and you're not thinking about anything else. You know, those
time
are
to
other
baby-proof
issue.
The house when your kid's coming home with mental problems. Sorry.
I mean, it's hard to say. It's really, that's a hard thing to do.
A gun is one thing. A knife is another thing.
But he had both, Alan.
Yeah, no, I hear you. But I'm saying to you, Joe said guns and knives. People take knives out of the drawer all the time.
No, absolutely.
And kill other people.
But he had both. Yeah. I mean, he had both and access to both.
I'm not blaming the victim. Although, in a way, he's a member of the state legislature that allowed that to happen. So
you are?
No, but I bet he's thinking that. You know, I bet he's thinking that. He's got to be going through hell right now. That his son is dead, and it came about in this way, and
did
that in a way he's responsible.
What happened here? So the kid's there. The father killed the son. No, who killed the son?
No, the son killed
stabbed
himself. The father.
Stabbed the father. Critically injured the father.
He's
who is
in fair condition now?
A fair condition, and then he turned the gun on himself. This is a man who ran for governor. Was a nominee, Democratic nominee for governor in 2009.
Yep.
Stayed on in the Senate and went through a divorce at that time. So there was a lot going on in the family as well. But okay, we're going to move on to other stories. We will be back. We're going to talk a little bit about the holidays when we come back.
Oh.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Okay, we vetted that with the lawyers?
Good.
That's why I said it the way I said it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Okay, so we're doing a promo, right? Right. Okay. Anyway, so we go into this season, and the last 2 years they've decided, 5 o'clock is silly. Let's do it at night, and we'll do it at midnight. And we'll now do it midnight. So from like Thanksgiving, you're done. You're eating turkey. You're all, you know, whatever. And then you go to the stores and you go at midnight. Well, now the stores are going to open first thing in the morning on Thursday.
Sure.
And they're moving it up to like Black Thursday.
Yeah.
Horrible.
And a lot of people are upset. Especially,
who cares?
You know who cares?
I do. My son works for Best Buy, and he cannot come home for the holidays because he has to work. He and
the
his girlfriend are both stuck there.
The employees care, and there's a time for that, and there's a time not for it. And what do you gain? Because you're going to get the shoppers there whether you have it at noon or 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I mean, theoretically, if they can just go a little further, then it'll be 3 days before Thanksgiving, and then they'll have Thanksgiving off. They can close it anyway.
Well, I have no problem with that. My problem is about the Thanksgiving holiday.
It's interesting to see how many people do take advantage of these things. I mean, they're not doing it because they're losing money on it. They're doing it because they...
Right, but then we could do the money. They can make the money the next day.
Well, they could or they couldn't. I don't know, because I'm not doing their planning for them, nor am I sticking up for it. I'm with all of you. I hate it.
I'm agnostic on this. I mean, I shop, you know, I sell a kidney and then I shop the day before Christmas. That's usually how it works for me. So.
How many do you have left?
Well, I have a few left, thank God.
Kidneys?
Yeah.
Okay.
There used to be something really special about holidays when you were a kid, and now I'm sounding old again, but everything was shut down. It was like just a desert at the shopping center. And that was special, and it was great. And it was a family holiday, and if we're a country of family values that I have to hear about with abortion and all this, let us have the holidays off.
Okay, but here's my question to you. Remember the old days when you couldn't go to a store on a Sunday?
Yeah, Blue Sunday. Blue
now,
Blue
your Loss. Argument Loss. Seems Loss, right. your Blue argument Loss. Seems to fit right in with that. You know,
okay, that was every Sunday. That's different. I don't like those laws because then it's regular. But this is like what, 1 day, 2 days, three days a year.
Well, we're open all the time.
The other issue here is that if you for the employees of these stores, you are not allowed to take the day off. If you take the day off, then you'll be fired from your job. Right. In many cases, although some stores are relaxing those laws
and so
or those
giving
rules.
A little extra for when you're there.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I think I saw the guy.
Oh, did they say there was more money?
Yeah, I think I saw the
guy. Like time and a half?
I think I saw the guy from Walmart, the head guy, on there defending this on the television the other day. And I think he had a long laundry list of what they're doing for employees. They're giving them a meal. They're doing this.
Well, right. They're having a turkey dinner. And you know,
some jobs, you get into it, and you know that you're going to work some holidays. I mean, there were Christmases. I worked every Christmas for years in radio.
Both here and other places.
You knew it going in.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on. Let's be adults, all right?
Yeah, but selling electronics?
Then don't sell electronics.
Well, they're also like 12-hour
jobs.
I guess my point is that we sort of had a system where you did it. Okay, you did it Friday. That was the time where it was set. You can have sales whenever you want to.
Yeah.
Do you have to have it on Thanksgiving? I guess that's my question.
It's nice to see the nostalgia out of all the progressives. It's great. I mean, hearkening back to the old days.
I want my son home.
I don't think this is such a progressive panel at all. I think I suspect you, Ray, of not being progressive, and I suspect Rosemary.
I don't like the term progressive.
I suspect Rosemary of not being progressive, and you know I don't suspect myself.
You suspect yourself of being progressive? Can you explain to us what progressive is?
I know you'll know it when you see it.
Let's progress, like
Duke Ellington and jazz.
If you have
to explain it, you'll never know.
Here's a litmus test. Kmart has this ad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Jingle bells.
And they do it. They have jingle bells, and they have eight gentlemen. And
Chippendales.
Yes, and they're behind a table, and they're in suits, and then the table moves, and you see that they have
their undies.
Joe boxer briefs on, or boxers, I guess.
Very
Joe
colorful.
Boxers. Yeah. Very colorful. Very holiday.
Yes. Very oriented. Festive.
And then they start to shake. Their pelvises in time to the jingle bells music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So each shake from the gentleman is a different bell, if you will.
Just like you were playing the glasses with the water.
Except that you're shaking your
genitals.
All right.
So I'd like to look at the time.
Yeah, look at the time, but I'd like to say something really quickly. This is a country that objectifies women terribly.
Absolutely.
We see women in their briefies and all the rest of that doing this kind of thing all the time.
Twerking and whatnot.
You put a guy on doing this, and this is grotesque. Now, I happen to think if you can objectify one, then you understand what you're doing.
Well, to quote the great Rosemary Romeo, two wrongs don't make a right.
Well, I agree with Rosemary.
Still, put it on after 10. Don't put it on during SpongeBob.
I don't like the objectification of women either.
I would just like to say that I am totally in favor of this commercial.
I love this commercial. And quite frankly, I don't know how you
guys
feel about it.
You guys are not progressive.
I don't know how you feel about it as a parent, but I have to
say, as long
as
it's not on during their shows.
It is on during their shows.
It was on during SpongeBob.
I saw it six times last
night. It's harmless.
Why are you watching kid shows is a better question.
You're not keeping on.
It's very cute.
I agree with you.
Kmart is facing bankruptcy, and they've taken a bold new step. I applaud it. I wish the newspaper industry, when it was facing troubles, had taken bold steps instead of sitting back and being safe and trying not to offend.
You can see Rupert Murdoch up there swinging his hips.
Ooh, okay. Now that's offensive.
There's been so much offensive in this program, and now we've just put the icing on the cake, and now I can leave, right?
Well, jingle bells to you all. We'll be back after this. Support for